Good morning. If you have your Bibles open to Proverbs chapter 1, you may want to leave them open there. We're going to be looking at that passage this morning as we go through our lesson. If you're visiting with us, I'd like to add my word of welcome to you. We appreciate you being here this morning, and if you'll take a few moments afterwards to stick around so we can get a chance to speak with you, we would certainly enjoy doing that. And if you're looking for a church home and you're new to this community, we'd certainly love for you to consider us and consider this family that meets here regularly. Good to see some people back that we haven't seen in a while. Bill, nice to see you back. He said he's a little bit hopped up on drugs this morning, so if he starts snoring, to ignore him. But he is feeling better and is glad to be out of the house. Glad to be out of the house. So we're thankful that you're able to be up and moving around and hope to see you more. The book of Proverbs is a unique book in many ways. It's a book that is written from the perspective of a father instructing his son. Now, when we think of son, we often think of small children. There's probably a father instructing his teenage or maybe even young adult son, but certainly the things that are taught here are things that we can begin teaching our children from a very young age. And the purpose of this book of Proverbs was, first off, to teach his son about the true nature of wisdom. Secondly, to teach his son about the benefits of true wisdom, such as happiness, peace, success, and ultimately life. And of course, to give his son general instruction for life. This morning, we want to look at this book, the book of Proverbs, and particularly this passage in chapter 1, from the perspective of parents trying to teach their children, parents instructing their children. And we want to examine five benefits or five gifts of wisdom that we can pass on to our children based on this passage in chapter 1. But I want to begin with just a little bit of an overview of the nature of the book of Proverbs and then look at a couple of key presumptions for the book of Proverbs before we get into those five benefits of wisdom. The book of Proverbs, written primarily by King Solomon, tells us at the very beginning, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. The first 24 chapters are Proverbs of Solomon. 25 through 29 are collected works of Hezekiah. Chapter 30 is a proverb of Agur. And 31, the proverbs of King Lemuel's mother. These have all been collected together by Solomon to pass on to his son. And again, at least three quarters of which have been collected or written by Solomon. And it's unique in all of the Bible. It's essentially kind of a collection of one-liners. Now, there are places, like this first chapter, where there are some thoughts that are strung together that are certainly related, but if you were going to do a topical study of the book of Proverbs, you'd really kind of pull passages from all over, wouldn't you? It's really difficult to study it by just going straight through it because you'll read some passages in chapter 5 and then again in chapter 12 and chapter 18 that are related to one another that seem to be kind of out of the blue. It's sort of this collection of one-liners. But secondly, it's unique in that there's really no history at all recorded in the book of Proverbs. It's not bound by time. And so it gives it kind of that transcendent quality of going beyond just the time in which it was written. Of course, the whole Bible is by nature, but this wisdom literature, these one-liners not being set specifically in history then give that feeling of not being bound at all by time, but for all time. A key verse to help us interpret the book of Proverbs is the first verse that Bart read for us this morning, chapter 1 and verse 7, where it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." And so Solomon is trying to tell us here that an appropriate response to God, fearing God, an appropriate response to God is based on a right knowledge of God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And secondly, that only a fool would know the Lord and not fear Him. When we look at the book of Proverbs, there are a couple of key presumptions that run throughout the book. And these presumptions inform us of how we are to read the book. And the first presumption in the book of Proverbs is that God is. God is. And really, quite frankly, we could say that is the primary presumption of all of the Bible, right? How does the Bible begin? In the beginning, God. Right? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. From the very beginning of the Bible, there is a presumption that God exists. There's no need before that verse to explain, well, there's this being and he's eternal and he's been all throughout time. He's not bound by time. He doesn't start that way, does it? It just simply begins, in the beginning, God. With an understanding that God exists and that God was beginning to act in creation. And that presumption is all throughout the book of Proverbs. Wisdom and knowledge are based on the revelation of God. But the second key presumption throughout the Bible is that parents are responsible for preparing their children for life. Parents are responsible for preparing their children for life. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, when Moses is wrapping up for the children of Israel all the things that they know or should have known that they've been taught by God as they are perched to enter into the promised land, he says, beginning in verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit down in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." And of course, in the New Testament, in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, it says, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord." It is our responsibility as parents, and this is an underlying presumption in the book of Proverbs, our responsibility as parents to prepare our children for life. It's not society's responsibility. We know how miserably society has failed at that. It's not the school's responsibility. Yes, they may be able to teach our children some things that we can't, but it's not their responsibility to ultimately prepare them for life. It's not even the church's responsibility. Yes, again, the church can aid in that. The church can assist in that. And certainly, as a community of faith, we support one another and teach one another in that. But it is ultimately our parents' responsibility to prepare our children for life. And so this morning, I want to look real quickly at five benefits based on Proverbs chapter 1. Five benefits of wisdom that we can pass on to our children. And the first benefit is the gift of choice. The gift of choice. In chapter 1 and verse 10 it says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." Verse 15 says, "My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from the path." And that first idea is that we have a choice. The wise man here is telling his son, when sinners confront you, when sinners come to you, when they're trying to draw you into their schemes, you have a choice to make. And I encourage you to choose not to consent with them. The truth is, we are the sum of our choices. Now, yes, there are certain things and circumstances in our lives that are beyond our control that may influence who we are, but ultimately, who we are is the result of the choices that we have made over time. And if I want to change who I am, then I'm going to have to change the choices I make. If I have a problem with addiction, then I'm going to have to change some choices I make. I'm going to have to change who I hang out with. I'm going to have to change how I spend my free time. I'm going to have to change how I spend my money. I'm going to have to change maybe my mode of transportation. I may have to change my phone and get rid of it so that people can't call me who used to call me. But I'm going to have to make some different choices. If I continue to make the same choices, I'm going to get the same results. And here, wisdom tells us we have a choice. But what we also need to recognize is that we need to learn to make those choices before we get in that situation. Because oftentimes, when we're faced with difficulty, we can't make the right choice. When police officers are training, they go through a lot of simulation training where they're put into rooms and places where things pop out and they have to choose whether or not to shoot, what to do in those circumstances. And they do this because they recognize that if they're faced with these things out in the real world and they haven't ever faced them before, they're going to have difficulty making those choices. But if they've done it before, if they've experienced it before, if they've encountered it, and they've made that choice already, then when it happens in real life, they know what to do. Todd is taking flying lessons. And what he told me is the first time they took him up in the plane is they turned the plane off. He's flying the plane and they turn the plane off. Because the first thing they want you to do is learn how to recover. Of course, he's got the co-pilot. He's got this pilot sitting there with him, the trainer, who knows what to do. But the point is they try to train you on everything that can happen when you're in the plane up in the air, everything that can go wrong. Because if you face it for the first time when it really happens, you're going to panic. You won't know what to do. So when we make choices, when we give this gift of choice to our children, we need to help them understand they need to make choices beforehand. They need to be prepared. We need to learn and know what God's will is for us so that we can choose before we get into those circumstances and know this isn't right. I've already decided I'm not crossing this line or that line. And so the gift of wisdom is a gift of choice. The second benefit of wisdom is that benefit of right and wrong, of moral absolutism. There are some things that are always right and some things that are always wrong. And again, in our society today, that's not what we always hear, is it? Up is down, down is up, good is evil, evil is good, men are women, women are men, what's the difference? But God has spoken to us and He's given us truth. And the gift of knowing God, the benefit of knowing God and the benefit of wisdom is knowing that some things are always wrong and some things are always right. In Galatians chapter 5, when Paul talks about the fruit of the Spirit, he talks about right and wrong because he contrasts these things. He talks about the works of the flesh versus the fruit of the Spirit. And he says, beginning in verse 19, "Now the works of the flesh are evident." They're evident. It shouldn't come as a shock when you read this list that these are things we don't want to be involved in. Paul says these things are evident. Adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. Paul tells us that's evident. We can look on the surface and see that these things are not what God intends for us, that these are not good things. In spite of the fact that our society has taken many of these things and added a good name to them or changed the name so they don't sound so bad, Paul says it's evident. But, he says in verse 22, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such, there is no law. And so the second benefit of wisdom is that it gives us that sense of right and wrong. It helps us to understand what is right. It helps us to understand what is wrong and where that boundary is. The third gift or benefit of wisdom is that gift of identity. That gift of identity. Evil preys on those who are weak. It tells us that Satan is like a roaring lion seeking those whom he may devour. Well, who does the lion devour? Does the lion devour the fastest of the flock of the other animal that it's trying to chase? No. It goes after the weak one. The child, or the one that's been injured, or the mom that's with child, because they're slow. They're the easy catch. They're the weak prey. And evil focuses or preys on those who are weak. And one of the most basic human needs is that need to belong, that sense of belonging to a group. Whether we get that sense of belonging in our family, whether we get that sense of belonging in our band, whether we get that sense of belonging on our football team, or whether it's in our church, or whatever it is, whatever we do to get that sense of belonging, we all desire that. We all need that. And when we don't have that, when we don't have that sense of identity, a sense of who we are and whose we are, then we're easy prey for evil. Notice what it says beginning in verse 11. If they say, come with us, let us lie and wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us have all one purse. Did you see the two words that prop up there so many times? Us and we. Become one of us. Become part of us. That's what evil does. It wants to bring you in. It wants to pull you in and identify with us. But the gift of wisdom gives us that gift of identity. When we know who we are, Genesis 1:27, you are created in the image of God. Acts 17, Paul says to those in Athens, you are the offspring of God. God has created us in His image. We belong to Him. And the gift of wisdom gives us that identity. And when we can identify as God's child, when we can identify as a child of the King, we don't need to join in with the us and them that we read about in chapter 1 of Proverbs. The fourth benefit of wisdom is the benefit of consistency. Verse 15, it says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil. What he's telling his son there is don't even get on the path. Don't even start down that path that they're on. The book of Psalms, also in the wisdom literature, begins in a like manner. Psalm 1 says, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. And you can see this progression. If you're walking in the path, you can be directed off the path, right? If somebody pushes you when you're walking, it's easy to be knocked off the path. But if I set foot and I stand in the path, I'm a little bit more firm. But when I decide to sit, and it says those who walk, those who stand, and those who sit, that's a progression that's really hard to get me out of there now, right? I've taken up residence in the path of evil. And so here the writer of Proverbs says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. The gift of wisdom tells us that everyone gets into sin one step at a time. And so if we keep our foot off that path, then we can stay away from it. The last benefit of wisdom that we can get from this passage is the benefit of the value of good friends. The value of good friends. I read recently that says everybody is the average, and it's a little bit overstating it, a little bit oversimplified, but everybody is the average of the five people you hang around with most. So think about the five people that you're closest to that you hang around with the most. That's who you're going to be most like, right? That's who you're going to be, who you have the most in common with, who you identify with. And every person is the average of the five people they hang around with most. And like I said, that's a little bit oversimplified. But there's a lot of truth in that. And we would do well to choose our friends wisely. In 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says, evil company corrupts good habits. A friend of mine years ago said, you know, we always talk about when we throw our white glove into the mud, we talk about the glove getting muddy. We never talk about the mud getting glovy, do we? It's real difficult to be that positive influence when we're surrounded completely by those who are evil. Again, that doesn't mean that we don't go into places where there may be people who are struggling with things like that, but who we choose to spend our time with needs to be those who are going to build us up. In the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, the wise man Solomon addresses it this way. He says, two are better than one, beginning in verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion, but woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm, but how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Wisdom tells us to choose our friends carefully, and that when we do, there will be great value in choosing our proper friends. So those are the five benefits of wisdom that we can pass on to our children and that we need to pay attention to. The gift of choice. We have the choice. We can choose. The gift of moral absolutism. The gift of identity. The gift of consistency. And the gift of the value of good friends. And as I close the lesson, I want to focus back on that gift of choice. In the book of Deuteronomy, as God was again leading his children into the promised land, and Moses was speaking to them as the mouth of God, in chapter 30, God says to the children of Israel, see, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. And that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, his statutes, his judgments, that you may live and multiply, that the Lord your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life. Choose life. And that choice stands before all of us today. God gives us that same choice today. We can choose blessing and life, or we can choose cursing and death. What's your choice? Wisdom tells us there's one choice that makes a whole lot more sense than the other. If we can help you this morning to make that choice to choose life, why not let your need be known and come forward as we stand to sing our hymn of invitation.